Hey, what's up, everybody?
Welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 290. Today, we're going to be looking at a very interesting case, a story of a man's life that honestly, I can't believe isn't more well known.
Yeah, I'm surprised this hasn't been like adapted into a movie yet or
something. Me too.
It's a crazy, crazy story. So a little bit different than what we typically cover here.
Yeah, it is different, but it is a mystery.
Yeah, the FBI is involved. So technically, I guess it could fall into kind of the true crime world a little bit.
Well,
we don't know, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, for all we know, there could be other elements to this.
That we may never know.
Exactly. But it's one of those mysteries that really makes you think and appreciate your life. Because what this man has gone through
will blow your mind.
It's insane. It's truly insane. And I think talking about things like this is really important because so many people suffer from similar, you know, diagnoses that he had or the straight up the same situation. And it's just, it's unbelievable.
So we're taking a look at the story of, we're not going to give away the ending here.
No.
But a man who went by Benjamin Kyle for many, many years. And Benjamin Kyle had amnesia or has amnesia.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what happened during 20 years of his life.
No. Many people say he was born on August 31st, 2004. And at that point was possibly around 50 years old. They didn't quite know at that time, but his life kind of began at that point. Which is really crazy to think about what that would be like, sort of starting your life, waking up one day, having no idea who you are or where you came from or even where you are now. And it's just, it's so bizarre.
Well, what's crazy too, is that this is, as far as I know, he is the only person whom the FBI listed on their website for missing persons who they actually knew the whereabouts of, but yet had no idea who this man, what his identity was.
Yeah.
And that's insane to me.
Yeah.
So we're going to go through the whole story of Benjamin Kyle. I just find amnesia to be such a crazy thing. I mean, just the brain as a whole and all the things that it can do, good or bad, fascinates me.
I agree.
And we've talked about similar types of stories in the past here in Mile Higher and in Fugue States. And like the one story that came to my mind that we've talked about before that's kind of similar, but I don't think we ever figured out for sure what happened to him. But remember that skier?
Oh my God.
In New York?
Of course. That story comes to my brain every couple of days.
That was like skiing one day. And then all of a sudden he ended up in California and he was like in the back of a truck.
Yep.
He was like, I believe he was like skiing with his friends. And then all of a sudden he went missing. He just like vanished from the slopes. And then next thing they knew, he was clear across the upside of the country.
Janelle's looking it up. What's his name? Danny?
Danny Philippidis?
Yes.
Philippidis. Yeah. Yeah. I covered that on my channel. And then I've always been so bothered by that one because YouTube took down my coverage on it and wouldn't give me an explanation as to why. And I always tried to ask them anytime I was able to get in contact with anyone over there and they never would say it. And I was like in my, you know, conspiracy mind thinking, what, like, what
right,
is the, why are you guys taking this down? And then there was like, it was really hard to find coverage after that. And the story kind of like disappeared. Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah, I don't even know that medical professionals ever figured out what happened to Danny.
Mm-mm.
But it kind, you know, obviously one of the things that comes up is being in a fugue state or dissociative disorder. And this happens far, far more often than I think people even realize.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that always is kind of in the back of my mind when we cover missing persons cases, because there's always like, this could happen.
Oh yeah, it has.
To anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of still sort of a medical mystery as to why it happens. And
There's still a lot that's unknown
about
that diagnosis.
But that to think that there could be more people out there who are missing persons that may just not know who they are is just such a crazy thing to ponder about.
Well, there are plenty of missing persons cases where they do end up finding that person and they have amnesia and are homeless or, you know, wandering around, don't know who they are. And they are able to connect them with their families. That's why coverage on those cases is so important.
But oftentimes the span that that happens is far less than with Benjamin Kyle here. We're talking 20 years. And his family, that he was reported missing and they were looking for him, but it took 20 years for him to resurface. And that's just crazy.
I'm just so glad we're learning about this man and talking about his case, because he seems like, for everything this guy has been through in his life, which we will go over everything, he's such a positive individual. I just, you can't help but love him in all his interview clips. Yeah, he seems
like a very likable guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. All right. Well, let's jump in because we have a lot to go over.
Let's jump in.
So, oh, and by the way, I am Kendall. This is Josh.
Yes. Janelle is here as well.
I'm so bad at remembering to introduce ourselves. Yep.
You can barely get the outro right every week.
No. Yeah.
In fact, most of the time, you can't.
Unlike any of our shows.
Mm-hmm.
The struggle is real. What can I say? Okay, so this story starts out on a hot summer morning, August 31st, 2004, at a Burger King in Richmond Hill, Georgia. Richmond Hill is a city that's a little over 20 miles south of Savannah. Around 5 a.m., an employee of the Burger King was gathering trash bags and boxes to take out to the large commercial dumpsters behind the building. Goes out there, and the air is thick with humidity, and just imagine the smell. There is this lingering scent of trash and decaying food. I mean, think it's hot Georgia.
Yeah.
Steamy.
In the summer in August. We know what it's like down there in August. So.
And out by the dumpster. So this employee is just going out to do this chore, and she spots something strange. There behind the rusty dumpster is a man lying naked and drenched in sweat who is badly burned by the sun. He was approximately 5'11". 240 pounds, and it initially appeared that he had two impressions on his forehead that seemed to be caused by blunt force trauma. His body was covered in red fire ants, along with dozens of ant bites. Just absolutely brutal. So this obviously startles this Burger King employee. And then they ran inside and called 911, and she told everyone that she may have found a victim of a gruesome murder.
Which I totally understand that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's early in the morning, especially, you know, you're kind of like, imagine you're kind of just waking yourself up and you do this every single day. You come into work and then one day you just walk outside and there's a man lying and it seemingly looks like he's dead.
Well, especially if there's ants all over him and they're biting.
Right. Exactly. Why would he just be laying there?
Right. Yeah. So let's listen to some of that 911 call.
No, I think he's dead, but he could be dead. I really don't know. Well, covered in blood, naked. It looked like somebody tried to kill him. I don't know.
Calm down, ma'am. Go send an ambulance.
So shortly after that call was made, police and ambulances arrived and discovered that the man was alive but unresponsive. So EMS transported him to the St. Joseph's Chandler Hospital in Savannah, Georgia. And this man had no ID. So the hospital staff had to come up with a temporary name for him. And at the time, there was actually already a John Doe in the hospital, because obviously that would have been their first choice. So they began referring to him as Burger King Doe or BK Doe. Which I'm like, why'd y'all have to do him dirty like that?
Yeah, what's wrong name with John Doe 2 or something?
Or like Jack Doe. They have to name him Burger King Doe. I don't know. It's kind of strange. But I mean, it becomes like an iconic name for him that he seems to have embraced. But anyway, BK Doe was thoroughly examined for injuries and his blood was tested for drugs and alcohol. And surprisingly, the man appeared to be in fantastic shape. His lab tests were described as surprisingly normal. They found no drugs or alcohol in his blood. And he had a long, unwashed beard, dirty fingernails, and clearly seemed like he had been living rough, you know, for a while. Sure, he was sunburned and had some ant bites, but according to reports, there was no evidence of recent physical trauma to the body or to his skull. Doctors did notice that there were three small depressions on his skull and some scars on his neck and left arm that were clearly from past injuries. He did have a pin as well in his left arm, and doctors were hoping that they may be able to trace that part back and, you know, figure out where he came from, but it was far too old to actually do that. Hospital staff also noticed that the man had severe cataracts, likely damage from the blazing Georgia sun, which heavily affected his vision, obviously. He was also frequently going in and out of consciousness and could only communicate a few things to medical professionals. He could tell his nurses when he was thirsty, for instance, and that he could not see. But other than that, he refused to eat or to speak and just laid there keeping his eyes shut.
Despite the fact that BK Doe appeared to be in good physical condition, the medical staff were concerned that he may have had some mental health or neurological issues. When they asked him his name, he replied, quote, "They call me BK around here." The nurse would ask for his real name and he would just reply, "BK Doe." After staying in St. Joseph's for 2 weeks, BK Doe was transferred to the psychological ward at Memorial Health University Medical Center in Savannah. The new hospital reported that BK Doe was, quote, semi-conscious upon arrival and refused to communicate or is unable to communicate with the staff beyond telling them that he was thirsty and in discomfort. However, after some time at MHU, BK Doe woke up and told staff that he could not remember who he was or why he was even in Georgia, but he was now certain that his first name was Benjamin, but spelled with two A's, so B-E-N-J-A-M-A-N. Later, Benjamin decided to call himself Benjamin Kyle because of his BK Doe pseudonym. Doctors at MHU Medical Center first diagnosed Benjamin with retrograde amnesia, which is also known as Hollywood amnesia due to it being a common expression used in dramatic soap operas and movies. Retrograde amnesia is a type of amnesia that stems from a brain injury or a traumatic event. Retrograde amnesia affects memories that were formed before the onset of amnesia. So someone who experienced this may not be able to remember what happened in the years or even decades prior to the injury. People who experience retrograde amnesia typically have memory loss with regards to facts rather than skills. So for example, although someone might forget whether they owned a car, what type that it was, they would still remember how to drive a car. At the time, doctors believe Benjamin may also have been suffering from schizophrenia. From October 2004 to January 2005, the medical staff treated him with heavy doses of antipsychotic medications. And we're all kind of perplexed by the schizophrenia diagnosis because as far as the information that we have, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But there's, and I will also say, there is some other information out there. Specifically, there's an article from the New Republic, a man by the name of Matthew Slate. I believe he's like a sociology PhD student. He wrote this big, long article about Benjamin Kyle's story. And in it, he goes into more detail around the schizophrenia diagnosis and saying that he was saying a bunch of crazy things, that they were demons and devils. And we didn't include a lot of the information from this article because there was no sources cited to it.
Yeah.
So I have no idea where he pulled this from. And again, where is he getting, like, did he go to the doctors and what are the chances that the doctors are going to disclose like all this
right
personal information, health information regarding Benjamin Kyle?
Which, so not to say that
it's necessarily wrong, but
we just wanted to, you know,
yeah. So we, the information you're getting from us is corroborated by multiple sources and also probably more recent than that article, which was from 2016, but we'll link it below. Cause if you want, there's like a little bit more detail and story in there that just can't be confirmed. And we haven't seen it said anywhere else. But if you're interested in reading it, it's definitely an interesting read. But take it with a grain of salt because you just don't know how much of it is actually true. Because a lot of the things later on that we'll go through kind of contradict some of the things that this article listed. And this was actually coming straight from Benjamin Kyle. So I don't really know what to believe with it, but we'll link it below if you're interested in reading through it. But anyways, the doctors hoped that with time, Benjamin would regain most, if not all, of his memories, but the medications seemed to make no improvements on his condition. Many people believe that perhaps if Benjamin could see himself, it might spark some memories. However, because he had bad cataracts, he couldn't see himself. However, Benjamin had no identity and therefore he had no insurance or money, so the hospital refused to perform surgery on Benjamin to fix the cataracts.
Gotta love American healthcare.
Oh, yeah.
I know, that's crazy to think. Just, this poor guy, he's just like suffering. He's got all these injuries and his eye, he can't even see.
Well, just as we go through this story, it's so sad. He was not able to get help from really anyone.
Yeah.
Like our system was
just, all the government
just failed
systems.
Him
yeah.
in every way possible.
But luckily, people out there started donating to Benjamin, and 9 months after he was discovered, there was enough money raised that the surgery could be performed. And when Benjamin saw himself in the mirror for the first time, he immediately noted that he looked 20 years older than he thought he was.
Imagine that, dude.
Because he doesn't remember this 20-year lapse of time in his life. So he's still thinking that he's 20 years younger than he actually. So imagine, that's just hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, I don't think you can wrap your head around it. It's like so far out of the realm of how, I mean, just, I don't even know how to say it. It's so, I cannot fathom waking up one day, having no idea who I was, thinking I was 20 years older, seeing myself for the first time, and you're older. Like, just the thoughts that you would go through, the feelings, feeling like you're just, you've missed a huge chunk of your life. How depressing.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Is just, I'd be sad.
Of course.
I'd be and terrified because I'd be like, what happened to me?
Yep, it's truly awful. I really can't think of many things that would be much worse than that.
But at this point, he's still no closer to remembering who he is or his identity. He's just absolutely baffled by what he looks like.
So eventually he was released from the hospital with no money, just a handful of memories and nowhere to go. At that time, Benjamin had come up with a loose theory on how he ended up in Georgia. He believed that he must have been traveling down Highway 17, where the Burger King was located, only passing through Georgia, because he theorized that he may have been in Florida when Florida was hit by Hurricane Charlie earlier in August of 2004, which may explain why he was having to travel through Georgia. But yeah, that's not confirmed. But regardless of why Benjamin was in Georgia, after his release from the hospital, he had no way to leave the state. And even if he could leave the state, he, you know, had nowhere to go. So with no other options, Benjamin began living between the Grace Hose Men's Shelter and various hospitals. So in 2007, 3 years after his initial discovery, Benjamin was admitted to the Lewis Healthcare Center, where he met a kind nurse named Catherine Slater. And Catherine felt so bad for Benjamin, even though she wasn't sure he had amnesia. But despite this, she actually invited him to come over to her house and complete small tasks in exchange for $100 a month.
Yeah, it sounds like he just came over and like would do little handyman jobs around the house. And but it got to a point with her where she felt like he started breaking things.
Yeah, so that he would
that he could stay there.
Yeah.
Because he enjoyed, I mean, he enjoyed, and I think it was also like this self-discovery that's going on. He's like figuring out, oh, I do know how to fix this. I have all this, all these skills that I didn't know that I had.
Right.
And that must have been such a therapeutic experience for him.
Yeah. And it's probably nice to have company around him to be paid a little bit of money. I mean, he can't work, which we will get more into.
And I was also going to say too that she felt bad for him, especially because he had no family.
Yeah.
And he felt like, I think all of us can feel empathetic towards him.
Of course,
like being in the situation where you're essentially a nobody in this world and you have no family. And I think in her mind too, she thought maybe his family never looked for him or wasn't looking for him and just felt, I mean, felt terrible.
Yeah. And at one point while he was working at her house, he actually got inside of a truck that was in her yard and realized that he still remembered how to drive a car. Wouldn't that be such a weird feeling? You have no memory of driving a car, but you're like, I've done this before. I know how to do this. And the moment he started the engine, it just all came back to him.
Well, and they say muscle memory is a real thing, right?
Yeah.
Because driving a car, I feel like, is a lot of muscle memory.
Oh, totally.
Like,
yeah, you kind of go, what's the right word for this?
Like
on autopilot.
Which
sounds kind of weird when you're talking about driving. But yeah, you do.
But think about too, have you guys ever
like breathing.
Been gone even for like a week?
Yeah.
You go on a trip or vacation or something.
You haven't driven.
You don't drive for a week. Then you come back and that first time, I always look forward to that first time back in the seat, in the driver's seat. And I'm like, ah, I miss this.
Well, remember there was a long period of time. I had such severe driving anxiety. I didn't drive for, like at least a year.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, getting back behind the wheel was really scary for me, but I was surprised at how quickly I just, you know. Yeah, you'd like never forget how to drive a car.
Right. And let's be real. Like the main thing with driving is the other drivers on the road.
Yeah.
You know, you can go in a parking lot. I mean, anybody can drive a car. A 5-year-old could drive a car probably.
I don't know.
I mean, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Kids steal their parents' cars all the time.
Yeah, but that's not good.
I remember one time I was doing go-karts with my mom, and those things are hard to drive steer.
Yeah,
like,
they are.
Really crank it.
Yeah.
No power steering.
Yeah. And I remember being like, is this harder or easier than driving a car? My mom was like, oh, this is way harder. And I always was like, huh? Like, how is that possible? So she's like, driving a car truly is so easy.
It is. It is easy.
But I think also part of this experience for Benjamin too is like, it's not just like operating the vehicle, but once you get out on the road and like remembering all like how to read the stop signs and like there's a lot more
rules
to
of
it.
The road.
Yeah, the rules of the road. So,
and as time went on, these types of discoveries just continued. When Benjamin was in the right setting, he would suddenly recall a skill or a piece of knowledge that had been previously locked away behind the amnesia. By 2007, things did start to look up for Benjamin because he was earning a small amount of money, he was relearning skills, and had made a few friends. At one point, one of his friends asked Benjamin about the investigation into how he ended up as the Burger King Doe, and Benjamin admitted that he didn't know the status of the investigation, so this friend takes it upon themselves to contact the police and inquire. And that's when a wild discovery was made, which probably won't seem that wild to many of you, but the police had not been investigating the case at all. Apparently, they dropped Benjamin off at the hospital and then washed their hands clean of the entire situation. And by 2007, they were at a huge disadvantage. None of the physical evidence at the scene could be collected at this point, and witness statements were difficult to track down. Also, the hotels in the area had deleted their records and recordings after 30 days, and all abandoned belongings were thrown out or given away within the same time frame. Benjamin attempted to get help from Georgia Legal Services, but the group needed a full copy of his medical records. However, Memorial Health University Medical Center, where Benjamin got most of his medical care, refused to release the documents without an $800 fee that Benjamin simply could not afford. His friend, not knowing what else to do, reached out to Georgia State Congressman Jack Kingston for help. And to their surprise, Congressman Kingston was immediately interested in Ben's story. And with his help, Benjamin's DNA samples were sent to the FBI National Criminal Justice Information Services Division in West Virginia. And the FBI launched a widespread search for Benjamin's identity, but the process was slow and often disappointing.
During this time, Benjamin also began seeing a new doctor, a man by the name Jason A. King. Dr. King, an Atlanta-based psychologist, specialized in clinical and forensic neuropsychology, making him especially qualified for working with Benjamin. When he began his evaluation, Dr. King's goal was to determine if Benjamin was truly suffering from amnesia or if he was suffering from a different mental health disorder. Dr. King spent a lot of time running Benjamin through 21 extensive neuropsychological evaluations. Each one was meant to assess the degree of his memory loss, the legitimacy of his condition, and the signs of other underlying mental health conditions. After the tests were completed, Dr. King was certain that Benjamin was genuinely suffering from memory loss, but not retrograde amnesia. Instead, he was suffering from a condition called dissociative amnesia. Now, dissociative amnesia is similar to retrograde amnesia. However, it does have three important defining factors. First, those with dissociative amnesia may experience memory loss beyond the onset of the amnesia. Benjamin has said multiple times that beyond not remembering who he was before 2004, he also struggles to remember new things on occasion. The second defining factor of dissociative amnesia is that the patient may remember certain details or clusters of time before the onset of the amnesia, which this is also true for Benjamin, as he began recalling skills and certain events in his life before the amnesia, but was unable to remember clear details about those events. Benjamin, during one of the hundreds of memory tests he had taken over the years, discovered that he could name all the 20th century presidents. He could also remember that he was born 10 years before Michael Jackson, and he felt that he had memories of being in or from Indianapolis. The last and most important detail about dissociative amnesia is that this type of memory loss is almost exclusively discovered in patients who simultaneously suffer from a cluster B or cluster C personality disorder. So personality disorders are a type of mental health condition that causes individuals to fall into patterns of behavior that affect the way they see themselves and the way that they interact with other people. Cluster B personality disorders tend to affect the patient's overall emotional state. Those suffering from cluster B disorders may be seen as erratic, manic, or dramatic. Some conditions under this umbrella include antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, and histrionic personality disorder. Now, cluster C personality disorders also affect a patient's overall emotional state, but it specifically affects their self-image and ability to interact with the world as a whole. There are three specific disorders in cluster C, and they include avoidant personality disorder, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, and dependent personality disorder. Both cluster B and C personality traits can manifest in a person without other diagnosed mental health conditions, but it's important to note that these traits are also very common in those who are diagnosed with schizophrenia. And to make it very clear, schizophrenia is not a personality disorder, but rather a psychotic disorder. This may suggest that Dr. King believes Benjamin does have some factors that point to his previous schizophrenia diagnosis. In fact, when making the diagnosis of dissociative amnesia, Dr. King stated that it likely began in 2004 as a manifestation of mental illness. The most important detail of Dr. King's report, however, was that Benjamin's memory loss was not suggestive of malingering, which, if you're not sure what malingering is, it's basically exaggerating a sickness and ailment. Janelle can expand on that to get out of something.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, it's not like faking sick as a kid, though.
Yeah.
It's like a lot more intense than that.
So what does this mean to Benjamin? It basically means that his lack of memory prior to 2004 is, in fact, real. Benjamin was not exactly thrilled to be told that his memory loss stems from mental illness, but the confirmation of his reality was a relief, as many people had made it clear they did not believe Benjamin's story. And this was something he had to deal with for a long time and probably still has to deal with even today to some extent.
But over the years, Benjamin Kyle has been told by countless people that he is a liar and making all of this up, which I cannot.
That's horrible. Imagine going through this and then nobody believes you.
Insane. It's so frustrating.
Despite even having doctors backing up your claims.
It doesn't shock me, though. And most of these people were strangers on the internet who don't even know Benjamin. But there have been some people in his personal life who also claim this, including one of his original doctors from back in 2004. It seems that anywhere you find a discussion of Benjamin online, you will find people claiming that there is no way that his story could be true. From moderators on Web Sleuths to supposed medical students on Reddit, there always seemed to be someone that was convinced that Benjamin Kyle is a master manipulator who fabricated the entire story of his condition, which...
For what?
Yeah,
dude. For what does he have to gain? He can't even get a job.
Like, no, he's spending most of his time like sleeping outside and just like, why would anyone do this? For what? For what? Just absolute insanity. But yeah, that's the world we live in. Here's an example of a Reddit post. Medical student here. How do you respond to the fact that your type of amnesia cannot be caused by trauma, isn't medically possible, and is psychological in nature? I'm sure I will get downvoted to oblivion for this, but it is the truth, guys. Also, I should clarify by saying this type of amnesia is very real. It just isn't caused by brain damage, but rather psychological in nature.
Here's a statement from Web Sleuths from somebody else that says, while reading these documents, I noted that there was absolutely no physical evidence to support him being beaten. None. It appears he passed out alongside a dumpster. You can come to your own conclusion as to why he might have passed out alongside a dumpster.
People are so fucked.
Good God, man.
So with Dr. King's statement that Benjamin is not exaggerating his condition and that he is suffering from some sort of mental illness, it seemed that a level of credibility was sort of given to his story. And then in 2008, good old Dr. Phil, of course, reaches out to Benjamin and invites him to come on the show. This is the gold nugget for Dr. Phil.
Oh, this
Phil.
Is this right is, in Dr. Yeah, Phil's this is the exact type sweet of spot for content.
Spectacle he wants,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Catch me outside. How about that?
Exactly.
Like, good God, man.
Remember I went through a Dr. Phil stage?
Yeah, you were standing Dr. Phil for a while.
I kind of was.
It was on in the house all the time, and I was just like, get this.
This was a long time ago. I grew up, like, watching it because I would watch Ellen every day when I got off the bus when I was home from school, and Dr. Phil comes on right after Ellen.
Which Dr. Phil is or is not a doctor?
He has his doctorate in, I think, psychology.
So he has the title doctor. But that is misleading to a lot of people to be like, I am Dr. Phil, and you're kind of, you're interviewing people. It's like Dr. Oz as well. You know, it's like that
Dr.
TV
Oz
person.
Is a doctor too, right?
Well, I mean, they are doctors. They he has a doctorate in clinical psychology, but he...
Is he a practicing doctor?
Though he ceased renewing his license to practice psychology in 2006, so he's not licensed.
Okay, so at the time of this episode, he was not a licensed doctor. But again, right. Like he's just interviewing. He's a personality at this point.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like he's like diagnosing him or anything.
No.
Also, he has, according to Google, never been licensed to practice in California, which is where it films. So.
Okay.
I mean, clearly he's exploiting people.
Yeah.
So that's why that's what you're doing as a doctor, especially of psychology, that's really shameful.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty awful. That's why I stopped watching him years ago.
Do these doctors take ethics in school?
Yeah.
So they just throw all this out the window for a TV contract. They're like, if I can make millions of dollars, then I'll exploit people. All
right. Right.
Which this poor guy too, he probably was like, this is a great opportunity.
Yeah. And honestly, in a lot of ways, it was.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have many other options at the point. He needed people to know his story and to listen to him. And he needs to be seen by as many people as possible to possibly be reconnected with someone who knows him.
True. But I think it's a double-edged sword anytime someone goes on here, because obviously there's going to be positive reactions, but it's also going to fuel the haters too.
Oh, for sure.
Because just his methods, and he always like has his little lie detector dude on there, and like
they make him do the reenactments. Yeah. I'm sure they had him like walking around pretending not to know where he was, or possibly reenacted the Burger King scene.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it is so exploitive.
I tried really hard to find clips of this episode.
Oh, no. Dr. Phil has his shit locked down.
Like, there's nothing out there. I could not find anything.
CBS is a big copywriter.
I was just curious if it was out there. Like, I know. Just couldn't find it.
I just wanted to watch it myself.
Yeah, there was like this one YouTube clip that this person took, but it like chopped it up and it made no sense. So I was like,
These days, it feels like there's an app for absolutely everything in your life. Well, one of my favorite apps out there is ZocDoc. And I've used ZocDoc over the years many times because it seems like I've had to change health insurance way too often. And when I use the health insurance websites to try and find new doctors, it is an absolute pain. And oftentimes I have to manually call, speak to the receptionist, wait on hold, only to find out that that doctor is not taking new patients. And then I'm back at square one all over again. Well, just recently in the past year, I had a little bit of a medical issue and I need to see a doctor quickly. And guess who I turned to? None other than ZocDoc. And I hopped on the app, put my insurance information in, and my zip code, and boom, I found an amazing physician's assistant that was close to my house, made an appointment, was in there the week of, and I got all the help that I needed. And now it's my primary physician. Absolutely love this doctor, and hopefully I don't have to switch again. But if I do, I'll just punch it back into ZocDoc and I'll find the next top-rated doctor to go and visit. ZocDoc is a free app, which I love, and a website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You don't have to wait on hold or anything like that. But the best thing about ZocDoc is the patient reviews. These are verified and from actual real patients, so you know what you're reading is legitimate, because everything has reviews these days. I use reviews for almost every decision in my life, and one of the most important decisions is finding a great doctor. So being able to use ZocDoc's reviews to find a great doctor, no matter what you need to see a doctor for, is absolutely clutch. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That is incredible. You can even score same day appointments sometimes. So if you're in need of a doctor, go to ZocDoc.com/milehigher and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/milehigher. Check them out today, ZocDoc.com/milehigher.
Well, anyway, this episode aired on October 16th, 2008, and was a bit of a surprise to many viewers and Benjamin himself. For starters, the show was able to gain access to many of Benjamin's medical records, which were provided by Memorial Health, free of charge. That's right, the same hospital that refused to aid in an investigation into Benjamin without an $800 fee provided records to Dr. Phil for free.
They're like, how is that even possible? How is that even allowed?
Yeah,
he's not a licensed practitioner, and yet he gets access to his medical records?
Yeah. I'm confused by this.
I don't know, because even if he was licensed, you can't just like go get medical records from someone.
Do you think it's possible that they have someone on the Dr. Phil team that's licensed, that's requesting these
things? It doesn't matter if you're licensed.
Right, because then you're...
Don't just get to go as a light. It's not like, oh, I have the rights to everyone's medical records because I'm licensed.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Go around collecting them.
So I genuinely don't know how they did that.
It's very,
very bizarre.
He works some Dr. Phil magic.
Yeah. Unless my only thing I can think of is Benjamin somehow gave them permission to get it.
True.
Oh, that's well, it's confusing though, because it's reported that it was all a surprise to him, but maybe they wanted him to act.
Maybe they're like, we'll give them to you. If you okay this, we'll then give you them afterwards.
Who knows? Fucking knows. Dr. Phil. Anyway.
And I'm sure he like blasted them on the screen, like redacted stuff off of it. Oh, yeah. You know how he does that with people's personal shit? I'm sure there was
like a gotcha moment too where he's like, guess what we have here today? Dr. Phil's team investigated these medical records in an attempt to find new answers, but unfortunately, his team didn't come up with any new details. However, Dr. Phil, of course, paid to have Kyle seen by a professional hypnotist in an attempt to recover some of his memories. And it was during this session that Benjamin was able to partially recall his social security number, which was consistent with social security numbers issued in Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and Indiana. And this was especially interesting because Benjamin had previously disclosed loose memories of being in Indianapolis in the past. And these details helped viewers to believe that the memories recovered from the hypnotist may indeed be accurate to some degree.
Which I think that alone is controversial. I've heard mixed things on using hypnosis for recalling memories and things like that. Like it's very, I think it, in the psychology community, it's a very split.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Like how legitimate is that practice? Like, is there science to back up that this actually works and what they're actually pulling from are accurate memories?
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you think about it, one of the biggest topics or subjects that these regressive hypnotists are used are alien abductions.
Oh, right.
And yeah, almost every alien abduction case, like the one that comes to mind, Travis Walton, is probably the most famous one.
We covered that one.
And basically his entire experience, and Betty and Barney Hill as well, were another one where the only way we knew about the alien abduction was through hypnosis and hypnotists working with them. And so, you know, I know based on those cases, very like, very split on whether or not people believe that the memories are actually accurate or true.
Like everything.
Obviously very different in this case. We're not talking about alien abduction here.
No. Although that's a whole different ball.
I mean, although we don't know, 20 years, but never know.
New theory. I guess you never know. But I'm curious to hear the audience's perspective on hypnosis. It's something I don't know a lot about, but I'm really interested in. I have heard stories of people who have been able to like quit smoking or, you know,
a lot of people swear by it.
Or have like been able to process through traumas because, but I don't know.
But then like it goes even a step further with like past life regression and things like that, where people claim to be able to, you know, figure out what your past life
was. There's definitely like a scale of it. Yeah, I feel like you can't judge it all as a whole because of some kind of, I guess, malpractice of it, but.
Well, we've been to a hypnotist show in Vegas.
Oh, yeah, we did do that.
And that seemed pretty crazy.
Like, remember you started getting hypnotized in the audience? Were you just telling me that?
No, I think I was legitimately. But
I was judging.
I don't know. I want to go to another one and really try to get into it and see if I can get hypnotized.
It is fun to go to those shows.
It seems legit. It seems like I have a hard time believing that it's like just actors planted in an audience.
Dude, I would never do one, especially in Vegas.
I saw that same one.
Did you?
Yeah, my brother tried to go up there.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me that.
And it got turned down because it wasn't working on him.
Didn't we all go to one together, too, when we were in Vegas?
I don't think so. Maybe not. That was the only one I've been to.
Okay. I think I've been twice. I don't know. It's been a while.
Hypnosis is very interesting, though. I'm very open to it.
Well, another suggestion from the hypnosis session was that Benjamin may have had 2 to 3 brothers, but he couldn't recall their names or faces. And this was a particularly upsetting realization because if Benjamin had family out there, obviously he's wondering why they haven't come forward to claim him. Dr. Phil also had some age regressed photos created of what he could have looked like through his 40s and through his 30s.
His only contribution, it seems like, to his case, pretty much.
And these look, I don't know about these.
Yeah. Just high tech technology they got there at the Dr. Phil show.
Someone made those the morning of.
Someone typed in age regression AI generator and like put his face
in there. 2008. They didn't have that.
True. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be trippy to somebody see yourself what you could have looked like. Yeah. I feel like it'd be kind of traumatizing. And of course, he's reacting to these live on the show. Yeah, very exciting.
Do you know this man?
Crazy. So The Dr. Phil episode wrapped up with no major advancements to Benjamin's case, but it did increase public knowledge of the case, which led many to be hopeful of new tips and that they, you know, would start coming in regarding to Benjamin. Maybe someone knew him or recognized him or, you know, had some connection for him. Maybe knew his brother. I don't know. You never know.
Well, maybe his family members watching the show.
Right.
I mean, you never know. So,
yeah.
And I think his viewership is decent. So
it actually is.
It's like one of the most popular daytime shows.
Especially in 2008. That's when I was watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the very least, Dr. Phil is raising awareness.
Yeah. So after the Dr. Phil episode aired, people across the United States began, of course, coming up with various theories about who Benjamin could be. And people would find missing person cases from around the time that Benjamin was found. And as long as the person who was missing was over 50 years old and white, there was someone who believed it could be Benjamin. There was also a handful of individuals who claimed they knew Benjamin, but in a 2012 AMA or an Ask Me Anything on Reddit, Benjamin revealed that none of the people who claimed to know him actually did. Some had even gone as far as having their DNA tested, but there was no luck.
In 2011, 1 year before he would do his Reddit AMA, he was invited to be the subject of a documentary by John Wickstrom, a graduate student at Florida State University's College of Motion Picture Arts. Benjamin then had to travel for this documentary down to Jacksonville, Florida, by foot, mind you, because again, he has no money, no way to drive a vehicle legally, and no access to one to come and participate in this student's documentary. Which the documentary's on YouTube and we'll link it to. It's definitely worth a watch. It's only 9 minutes. So
yeah,
I don't know if you call it a documentary or not. But
no, it's like a short film.
Yeah, it's a short film. But
well, what's interesting is when they were filming it, they said they started it as they thought it was going to be kind of funny. I think it was a school project.
Yeah.
And they thought it was going to be this, kind of comical look at a somewhat serious issue. But then as they were working on it, they realized how serious, sad his situation actually was. But they definitely tried to put in some humor.
Definitely.
In the documentary.
Yeah, there's some funny scenes in there.
I don't know if it was him or it was just stock footage, but they have someone like holding a smoke signal.
No, and it's him.
It's actually him. They had him hold a smoke signal.
Yeah.
Well, then they made him hold like a message in a bottle.
Yeah,
and they're like, this is his message in a bottle, and like throw it into the water. They make jokes. At one point, he's like sleeping on a piece of newspaper, and he's talking about how it's like it's free, so he reads it for entertainment every week. And it says something on the back about sweet memories or something. And they're like, so you sleep on a newspaper that says sweet memories? And he's just like, dude, whatever, and like, puts it behind his head and like pretends to sleep.
But
he has a great attitude.
And the film gets a little bit more serious as it goes on. It does talk about all the ways that the FBI had attempted to identify Benjamin, as well as some of the other efforts to figure out who he is, which included a lot of different things.
And they did try to help him too.
Yeah. They definitely did. But some of the other ways they tried to figure out his identity included fingerprint comparison on the FBI's National Crime Information Center database, utilizing age adjustment software to get younger photos of Benjamin, Y-DNA tests through the Center for Human Identification, a Y-DNA test for genetic genealogy through Family Tree DNA, Y-DNA online database searches on ybase.org, ysearch.org, usystrdatabase.org, and Ancestry DNA, as well as birth announcement research in Indianapolis newspapers from around the time of Benjamin's supposed birth date, looking for him through Missing Persons Network, searches of high school yearbooks from high schools in Indianapolis around the time it is suspected that Benjamin would have graduated. But despite all of these exhaustive efforts, nothing came from it. And Benjamin, like I said at the beginning of this episode, became the first U.S. citizen to be listed by the FBI as a missing person despite his whereabouts being known, which I think is saying something for sure. According to John Wickstrom, after the case started to go cold, the media gave up on the story and Benjamin was left, quote, stranded with no name, no social security number, and ultimately no help. When the documentary was filmed, Benjamin admitted that he was homeless and living in a tent behind the police department, which is just kind of crazy to me that the police have this guy living behind their building, and yet he's getting no help.
Isn't that such a symbol?
The American way.
Yeah. He's literally out there. They could help him. They're not.
Well, I think they're probably, we already tried to help you, but there's nothing else we can do.
Which, I mean, to a degree.
There really wasn't that much else that they could do.
The system's at place that really screwed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's even crazier is that he had to live in a tent out just like in this wooded area because none of the homeless shelters in Florida would take him in without an ID.
Yeah, this is a really sad. I didn't even realize that you have to have an ID. I mean, it makes sense for safety reasons, but they even filmed in that short film them going
Well, yeah, we're going to show that right now, actually.
Oh, we are?
Yeah, okay. Let's watch. Show that part here because, okay. Yeah.
Oh, then you let people stay that don't have social security numbers.
You have to have social security and you have to have a valid photo ID.
We explained his story with the articles and even a clip from Dr. Phil.
There's nothing that can be done.
Not unless you can find it.
Oh, no.
That's the only way. I mean, you know, I could say my name is Josephine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But still, no luck.
God, it's so sad.
I know that. It just feels so bad for him, especially the shot of him walking out of the homeless shelter, being denied a spot there because he has no ID.
Mm-hmm.
So without an ID or social security number, there's no option to get a job. There's no option to gain government benefits. And really, there's no options for Benjamin to improve his quality of life. The Social Security Administration did have a representative that was willing to be interviewed for this film. And he recognized that Benjamin's situation was unfortunate and detrimental to his well-being, but as the laws are written, there is no way for them to issue the man a new social security number. Sadly, Benjamin told John Wickstrom that sometimes he wishes he just hadn't woken up.
Isn't that the saddest thing ever?
Oh,
I can totally see how you would feel like that. Just kind of, it's almost like you just teleported here.
Yeah.
He also talks about how if he had known all this, he wishes he would have just made up a social security number at the hospital originally when he was brought in.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah, it's horrible. Honestly, his determination and like will to still live
is keep
pretty
on
impressive.
Going. Yeah.
I mean, this would be so depressing. I mean, he has nothing. He has no one. And he still continued to try. I don't know. I think he's very inspirational.
He doesn't even know his name.
No.
Or right. His age.
No.
He was literally going by BK Doe.
I mean, really imagine what that would be like, not knowing where you came from, who you came from. There's no one out there who loves you. You know, I mean.
Well, and to know for a fact that you were birthed by somebody.
Yeah, it had to be, right?
But you have no recollection of who that person is.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, in his rational mind, but wouldn't you, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I would start having thoughts of like, did I just literally appear here? Is this some like weird, I don't know, wouldn't you have like those types of thoughts?
I'm sure
you
did. It's
just like, how does no one know who I am? There's no one. I think that would be the most depressing part of all of it, is feeling so, you can't feel more alone in the world than Benjamin did.
Right.
In my opinion, and I know this is just my opinion because some people do love shopping, but in my opinion, there is nothing worse that you can waste your time on than shopping. I hate shopping, especially in person. I hate dressing rooms. I have dressing room trauma. I don't even like online shopping because it becomes overwhelming. So if someone can do my shopping for me, I am all about it. And that's why I've been a Stitch Fix subscriber for years, a paying subscriber. I always like to make that clear. I have been paying for the service for longer than they have actually been sponsoring our content, and I truly love it. I just give my stylist my size, my style, and budget preferences, and I order a box when I want to and how I want. There's no subscription required, which is great. I don't think a lot of people know that. And then they send 5 just for me pieces, plus outfit recommendations and pro styling advice. I keep it works and send back the rest. And sending back the rest could not be easier. They send you a prepaid bag. You just throw everything in there, stick it in the mailbox, and you're good to go. So easily upgrade your wardrobe this year with a professional stylist that helps find on-trend favorites that will work for you. And shipping, returns, and exchanges are always free. Style that makes you feel as good as you look. Get started today at stitchfix.com/milehigher. That's stitchfix.com/milehigher. stitchfix.com/milehigher.
One of the good things that came from John's film was he was able to get Benjamin's story featured on the local news. And after this happened, something amazing happened. Florida Governor Michael Weinstein had Benjamin issued a legacy Florida ID with his chosen name, Benjamin Kyle. And this is actually a great clip here.
A long time.
Oh, damn.
This is Benjamin's Florida legacy ID. No, there's no social security number yet. But this does establish his new identity on the state level.
Amazed. absolutely floored, just about ready to cry, actually.
Oh, he's so cute.
And my goal isn't to leave it at that now that Benjamin has an ID. He needs that Social Security number. And now U.S. Senator Bill Nelson's office is helping us take the next steps. The man you met tonight doesn't seem to deserve this, I mean, nightmare that he's lived the past half dozen years. And so we're trying everything we can to try and help him establish this new identity and find out who he really is.
It's incredible. Why can't the FBI identify him? And like dental records? Sure. I mean, wouldn't something like that work?
All these different things. I talked to an FBI agent in Savannah area. He said, we've done all of that. Fingerprinting, dental records, DNA, whatever. He said, we did everything. We came up empty. He's not on any records that he's been in trouble with the law or anything like that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It really is.
In this day and age, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to me that in the year 2004, still tons of technology, tons of electronic records, and there's absolutely nothing. And even paper records, they can't seem to track it down.
Yeah.
Wild. But this was the moment that really helped turn Benjamin's life around. Afterward, a local restaurant hired him to perform maintenance, a position he still held as the documentary came to a close. Additionally, someone who saw his Florida news story offered to let the man stay in an air-conditioned shed on his property, meaning Benjamin was no longer sleeping in a tent in the woods. As the film wrapped up, they informed the audience that the next step in Benjamin's journey was for the public to help him gain access to a Social Security number, which they started multiple petitions in an attempt to help Benjamin Kyle gain access to his Social Security number. And the main petition, which ran through whitehouse.gov, and as we know, from personal experience, there's a time limit on how long that can run.
Yeah.
That you have to acquire like 100,000 signatures before it can actually be reviewed by the White House.
Or they just never do.
Or in our case, you do reach it or far exceed it and you literally hear nothing from them.
Nothing. I don't even think that works anymore.
Yeah. I don't think they got time for that anymore.
Yeah, that made me really mad. Anyway.
So when this was going on, this was also the same time that Benjamin hosted his 2012 Reddit AMA, because obviously he's trying to drum up attention and get enough signatures to get that Social Security number.
So this 2012 AMA, which he conducted in two parts, was incredibly eye-opening. For the first time, many people became aware of the massive issue in Benjamin's life. Without a Social Security card, Benjamin had been incapable of holding down a real job, getting a home, or living any type of normal life in the 8 years since he was found. And at first, Benjamin had to defend himself in the AMA, as many of the early commenters had read the Web Sleuth's hit piece about the man. The blog post, which came from the manager of Web Sleuth's, only known as Trisha, claimed that Benjamin was clearly a liar. According to Trisha's post, there was zero record of Benjamin ever being diagnosed with head trauma, which clearly meant he was lying about having amnesia. She went on to claim that she spoke directly with the police in Richmond Hills and that they told her Benjamin didn't have any other injuries besides scabies. And the post failed to mention that there appeared to be no medical documents of Benjamin having scabies. It also failed to mention that the local police had waited 3 years to begin their investigation into Benjamin's incident. In defense of himself, Benjamin was quick to update his AMA's opening info to point out his official diagnosis is not retrograde amnesia caused by head trauma, but dissociative amnesia caused by a mental health episode. Therefore, Trisha's justification that he was lying was illegitimate. So with that rumor dispelled and out of the way, users began asking genuine questions to Benjamin, who did his best to answer each. Majority of the questions circled around the things that Benjamin did or did not remember. The AMA took place 8 years after Benjamin was found, and he had regained quite a few supposed memories in that time. Many of Benjamin's memories revolved around locations. Benjamin had clear memories of Indianapolis, Indiana, and this is something that he mentioned multiple times during his interview with Dr. Phil. In the AMA, Benjamin revealed that Dr. Phil even told him that he wanted to take him to Indianapolis and let him walk around. But after his interview, Benjamin never heard back from Dr. Phil or his production team. But still, he had clear memories of landmarks in the area, including some tourist attractions, a church, a cemetery, and a specific section of a river. Another location that stuck out in Ben's memory was Colorado. In fact, over time, he recalled very specific memories of the University of Colorado Boulder. His memories were all visual, but the descriptions were spot on for the Norland Library and multiple nearby restaurants and institutions like the Round the Corner restaurant and the Fox Theater. Here's a few clips of Benjamin talking about some of these memories.
Benjamin, I was reading a bit. You remember some things, places, locations, some events. You don't remember people. What is that like? What do you remember?
Well, I remember being in a lot of places in Denver, Boulder. I don't know how to describe it, actually. I mean, how do you tell people what you can't remember?
Are the memories, Benjamin, are they visual? Do you remember being hugged ever, for example?
No, I don't remember that. Mostly, they're visual memories. I mean, I can picture the movie theaters in Denver or the streets. I get on the Google Street View and look around. I see how things have changed. And every once in a while, something will bring back a memory.
What do you remember of your life before?
Bits and pieces. Like I'm convinced that I was born and raised in Indianapolis. I have some very vivid memories of living in Denver, Colorado.
Okay. And then your name, Benjamin Kyle, where did that come from? Because you don't know that's your name, right?
No, I'm convinced that Benjamin is my name. You talk to psychiatrists, they say, well, maybe my mind just made it up. But, I'm convinced it is. We're including the odd spelling, ending in M-A-N instead of M-I-N. When I was in the hospital, the ward clerks would come in and they would demand to know the last name. We have to have a last name for our records. And they would literally yell and scream at me, practically demanding that I give them a last name. And they were calling me BK Doe because I was found behind a Burger King. So I just picked Kyle. That was the only name beginning with a K that I could think of. And I told them my name was Kyle and they left me alone.
So Benjamin Kyle became your name.
Yes.
Now, has anybody, because you've been on some shows, there have been stories. We're going to talk about a film that was made about you. Has anybody reached out and say, dude, I know you?
There's been a few people, there's been a couple nutcases,
sure.
But, nothing really.
Does that surprise you that nobody has come out to say we went to school together?
Well, yes and no. For one thing, I think the media maybe overreaches or thanks because I've been on all these interviews. I think a lot of people just don't watch stuff like that.
Right.
So
even though you've had stories, that doesn't mean everyone has seen it.
Yes. It may be haven't seen it.
And was there any indication given from the person who found you and the doctors, what happened to you when they say you were found beaten up and naked?
It was actually not, I was found in 2004. It was actually not investigated until 2007. By that time, I never talked to the local police until 2007. And by that time, all, anything that they could have gone back and looked at was gone. Videotapes from security cameras and stuff. The restaurant is even closed. So,
you really are a man without any answers. Very few.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
State the obvious there.
Yep.
It really is unfortunate that the police didn't take this more seriously when he was found and at least like review the security footage and maybe find out exactly how he ended up by the dumpster least.
They probably easily could have figured out something.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
Or like see if there was any eyewitnesses to this guy or do a little bit of an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'd know more, but.
Here's a question that he got on Reddit. It says, did you need to relearn how to talk, walk, read, or write? And he said, no, my basic skill set was intact. Sometimes I don't know I can do something until I try it and then it just comes back. So he realized, there's these plenty of skills that he still had. It was somewhere in there. So Benjamin's other memories were a little less clear. He stated that he believes to know his exact age because he has a very vivid memory of being born exactly 10 years before Michael Jackson, which would make his birthday August 29th, 1948. And similarly, Benjamin spoke of vague memories that he had two or three brothers, but he couldn't remember their names and faces. God, what a weird feeling. And those memories and the others that were, quote, on the tip of his tongue are the ones that Benjamin said bother him the most.
And besides questions about Benjamin's memories, it seemed users were very interested in the emotional and social implications of his condition, One popular question simply asks, quote, are you generally a happy person, or does a mystery surrounding your life really weigh you down? Which I think is a very interesting question. And Benjamin responded, quote, I guess I would say I'm generally happy, but I get depressed sometimes. Benjamin also talked to a few Reddit users about the anxiety that came along the journey of trying to learn his original identity. He said that going back to his old life fully wasn't much of an option at this point. After all, he had been living as Benjamin Kyle for 8 years at this point. He also felt like he couldn't really move on as Benjamin Kyle because his baggage felt like too much for him or anyone else to bear. And I totally understand that. Imagine like trying to enter into new relationships and like you,
yeah,
like there's no past for you. There's like no memories there. Like that's, I understand how he sees that as like baggage. Right?
Yeah, totally. And just think as someone who meets him or someone who would become friends with him or enter a relationship with him, how hard that would be for the other person too. I have no idea what has happened in this person's life. And what if it's not great?
Right.
You know, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is scary. Some of the other questions that were asked are pretty interesting. Here's one that said, what would you do if they recovered your previous identity? Would you work at reassembling your pre-accident life or continue life as Benjamin Kyle? And he replied, a little of both. I'd have to merge both lives. Another question said, how important is it to you to know who you were? I mean, you've been living as Benjamin for the last 8 years. Is it important to you to figure out what happened, or do you feel that someday you will be able to move on and live life as Benjamin now? Is this something that you are uncomfortable with, or are you able to say that the past is the past and hope the best for the future? And Benjamin replied, the main thing is that I need a social security number so that I can get along with my life. I think my memories will eventually come back. It does sometimes worry me as to how I'm going to merge memories from my past life into memories of my present life. Another question said, do you date? Have you had any relationships since 2004? If so, how do women react to your predicament? Do you think you'll ever marry? Benjamin says, no. Considering the situation I'm in, I do not think that it would be ethical for me to try to develop a relationship, and I've done my best to avoid it. Ethical. I think I get that to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, like, because he doesn't know what he's been up to for the past 20 years.
No.
And really before that. So that's really hard, though. That, imagine having that realization personally, though, of like, it wouldn't be right for me to enter into a marriage with somebody because I don't know my past.
Again, how depressing. This guy can't do anything. Anything. It is impossible to exist in this world without knowing who you are and your identity and your past. I mean, it's just, it's like, it's torture.
Right. Well, he's really a man who's been fully frozen in time.
Yep.
And trapped by this past that he can't even remember. Also during the AMA and previous interviews, Benjamin told a story about dreaming he was repairing a stove. Later, he discovered that his dream was accurate and he really did know how to repair multiple pieces of kitchen equipment. In a response to Benjamin's dream, a user pointed out that a stranger working at a Waffle House had previously claimed to recognize the man. However, Benjamin was quick to point out that he and his team had reached out to Waffle House's corporate office, but never heard back. So there's a lead to potentially figuring out somebody who might know him, and yet Waffle House's corporate office doesn't even respond. So it was just another dead end. The AMA session was pretty heavy, but some users showed up with much more lighthearted questions for Benjamin. One user asked if he had started watching any shows or movies, only to realize he'd already seen them. According to Benjamin, he had that experience when watching Leave It to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet, Bonanza, and Star Trek. Though he did make it clear that he hadn't seen any Star Trek with the quote-unquote bald captain. The two-part AMA wrapped up after a few hours, and Benjamin seemed to have thoroughly enjoyed himself. Before signing off, he made sure to remind viewers that there was an important reason for doing all this, as he needed signatures on his government petition to be granted a social security number so he could earn money, pay taxes, and plan for his future. Benjamin was hopeful that the large turnout would get him the signatures he needed, but the petition sadly ended after getting only 2/3 of the signatures needed. Now, the only traces of the petition are found on archive versions of the government site, where it is marked as closed for not reaching its goal. Another petition was started in late 2011 by the filmmaker John Wickstrom himself. Unfortunately, it only gained the attention of 905 supporters before it was also closed out. It seemed that Benjamin was destined to be unknown forever. Still, the FBI agents working on his case never gave up hope. Three of them, Bo Radford Preston, Adrian Smith Makita, and one person who wishes to remain anonymous, started and personally maintained a Facebook page dedicated to finding more information about Benjamin's identity. It seemed that even when the media gave up on Benjamin, these three FBI agents never lost hope that someday they would discover his history.
Over the years, dozens of teams from a variety of genealogy research organizations had taken on Benjamin's DNA and attempted to search for his bloodline. And all the searches had been fruitless until 2015, when a team led by Cece Moore, an American genetic genealogist who is a badass and I love her.
Yes, yes.
She finally cracked the case. Of course she did. The team, which was made up of adoption researchers, used the process of elimination to determine Benjamin's ancestral bloodline. Then blood was taken from a supposed close relative to Benjamin. And here's a clip of Cece further explaining how they did this.
The methodology that we used to solve the Benjamin Kyle case was actually developed for adoption searches for people who wanted to identify their birth families. It's applicable to lost identity as well.
Moore and a team worked on Benjamin's case for 2.5 years, comparing his DNA to those in databases across the country. Along with information BK thought he remembered, Moore's team made the connection when law enforcement couldn't.
In fact, it really amazes me that law enforcement didn't solve this case sooner. We had his birthday. We had his home state. We had his family's religion. How could this not have been solved? It took all this time, and thanks to genetic genealogy and DNA detective work, he finally has what should have been his for years.
Side note, she is someone I would love to have on this show.
Yeah, we should reach out to her.
Dream guest. Yeah, we should. Why haven't we?
I don't know. She's amazing. And
she is.
There's an article from 2020 that says she's solved 109 criminal cases with DNA.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Which,
we should reach out.
Yeah, we definitely should. And I want to say, anybody out there who, you know, we get a lot of messages from you guys out there, and we always love seeing and hearing people talk about how, because of watching our show, it has spurred them to go into the criminal justice world in some type of profession. And if there's one profession that I think more people should go into, that if you really want to help it, you know, help families, genetic genealogists.
Huge.
Like, or anything forensic, honestly, anything forensic science is good too, but we need more people like this. Imagine if we had thousands of CC Moores out there, the amount of cases that could be solved. And the amount of families that could be helped. So just food for thought. I don't know about you, but I've always struggled to find the time to manage my personal finances. And at the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting or taking a look at all my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money and it does all that for me. I'm a huge fan of Rocket Money. You can try it for free, actually pay for the premium subscription, which is very, very affordable and well worth it. But if you're not familiar, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It also monitors your spending and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all of my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with a few taps. I love how the dashboard shows me this month's spending compared to last month, so I can clearly see my spending habits, plus leaving help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. They even send you email notifications whenever a transaction goes through and it doesn't know where to put it, and if it goes over spending limits, it'll let you know. Rocket Money will even help you try to negotiate lower bill costs for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. It's like having a whole team of financial professionals behind you, but it is just an app that is doing all this in the background and helping you get to a better place financially. I absolutely love it. I recommend it to all my family and friends. And it's no wonder that Rocket Money has over 5 million users and growing, and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/milehigher. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. Get it today at rocketmoney.com/milehigher.
And thanks to all their hard work, there was a match, and Benjamin finally had confirmed family lineage, and he was super excited. On September 16th, 2015, which was 2 months after the connection was made, Benjamin revealed on his personal Facebook page that he was excited to meet his potential family, but he was still waiting for individual family members to be located and tested. With this break in the case, iDignity, which is an Orlando-based organization, began aiding in the investigation so Benjamin could finally get his official ID and learn his social security information. Finally, on November 21st, 2015, Benjamin's true identity was officially confirmed and revealed. It turned out his real name was William Burgess Powell, born on August 29th, 1948, in Lafayette, Indiana. And I'm sure the first thing coming to your mind there is he was dead on about his birthday, August 29th, 1948, exactly 10 years before Michael Jackson. Yes, pretty incredible. Here's a clip from shortly after he found out his real identity.
Well, initially I was stunned. I mean, just literally stunned. I was not books. I couldn't even talk about it. I never really talked about the bad times, and there were some bad times in which, you know, geez. And, you know, I never talked to people about it because I never thought that, you know, I had the right to impose my problems on them. Sorry.
He's so sweet.
And, I don't know. You know, 10 years ago, if I'd have known that I had to go through this this past 10 years, I would have just made up a social security number in the hospital. I left Indiana in 1976, and they have not seen me since then. Of course, we haven't been in communication. They thought I was dead.
What's next for Benjamin? He's not sure entirely, but he has more options than he did without knowing his real name.
Is up in the air yet? I'm thinking right now that I'm going to stay in Jacksonville. I mean, I know so many people. My support system is here.
Just love him.
Yeah. So happy this has a happy ending.
Yeah, me too. So after this discovery, the genealogical researchers reached out to Benjamin, a.k.a. William's family, to learn more about his past. And according to his older brother, Furman Powell Jr., William was one of four sons. Both of his parents, Marjorie Powell and Furman Powell Sr., had sadly passed away many years ago. Furman Sr. had passed away in 1969 during a fishing accident when William was only 21 years old. Marjorie passed away in 1996. William had been raised in Lafayette alongside his brothers. He was the second oldest. His older brother was Furman Jr., and he had two younger brothers named Robert and Thomas. Sadly, Thomas had actually passed away at a very young age. Robert, the youngest son, lived in Florida, and Furman Jr. still lived in the family home in Lafayette. During this time, Benjamin decided to continue to go by his new name. And as he was preparing to make a trip out to Indiana to find his family, a reporter found and interviewed his older brother, Furman, about their family history. Furman, with a sigh, explained that their home life had been tumultuous. His parents were both from the military. Furman Sr. was a flight engineer for B-24s in World War II. Marjorie was actually a photographer for the Navy Air Corps. Their career similarities led them to meeting at an air base in Boise, Idaho. Later, the two of them moved to Lafayette, where Marjorie's family lived. Marjorie's mother lived in the home with Furman Jr. and his siblings, which made their living situation difficult. Their grandmother had a bad hoarding problem. She would fill the home with old clothes, porcelain figurines, and other trinkets. Furman Sr. was described as being typically quiet, but had a drinking problem and would find himself in fits of rage. And Furman Jr. did tell the interviewer that if he were still alive today, Furman Sr. would almost surely be diagnosed with PTSD. Still, it didn't excuse his behavior towards William. William was Marjorie's favorite son, which for unknown reasons made him a target in his father's eyes. Furman wouldn't go into further detail, telling the interviewer, "Let the dead bury the dead." However, he did say that the abuse towards William was violent and severe. And it was the reason that William moved out of the home at age 16 and went to live with another family in town. So he had been through a lot. And from that time on, William had a variety of odd jobs in his town. He loaded pallets in a factory, worked on equipment in a theater, and even did maintenance at a strip club. And this all continued until William was 25 in 1973. He had been living with a family in the area and spent every night having dinner in his childhood home. At that point, his father had been deceased for 4 years.
So at the time, it seemed like things were going to get back to normal for the Furman family. That was until William just disappeared. William's family filed a missing persons report, and police found that he was living in Boulder, Colorado with a coworker According to the missing persons report, William had been working at a movie theater in downtown Lafayette before he left for Colorado. The report stated that he'd been last seen in Lafayette with a coworker named Charles Getz, who went by Chico. So according to Chico, he and William used to drink whiskey and hang out together and talk. Chico said that William really didn't have any close friends and was a loner. One Sunday night, the two were drinking and the two just decided randomly, like, let's move to Boulder, Colorado, which I feel like a lot of people have that thing happen for them as well. Boulder, Colorado is a beautiful place.
Oh my God.
I see why people go there.
Stunning.
Which, in his interviews, he mentions Denver a lot too. So yeah. I don't know if he like bounced back and forth. I mean, the two aren't that far away from each other. So
what, like an hour or so?
A little less than an hour.
It's like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
No traffic.
That's true.
But this decision to just get up and leave Indiana was very impulsive. And apparently William had recently broken his arm from slipping on an icy dock at his old job and had received a small settlement, which would explain the pin found in his arm when he, you know, was discovered and put in the hospital. The two wanted to get out of Indiana and just randomly decided that Colorado would be the place to go. And once they got there, they got jobs at restaurants. Chico only stayed in Colorado for a year before he went back to Lafayette. And in 1977, Chico was visiting Boulder and stayed with William for a month. According to Chico, William was living alone and didn't appear to have made any friends. And according to him, this was the last time that he saw him. According to William's family, him disappearing left a huge hole in their lives, and his mother passed away in 1996 after never getting over the loss of her favorite son. That's just horrible. Heartbreaking. When Marjorie passed, Furman Jr. asked a friend in Army intelligence to find his brother so that he could settle their mother's estate. To his surprise, there was no records for William Powell. There was no contact information, no home address, no mortgage, nothing to signify that William Powell was even still alive. And with that, Furman had come to a sad conclusion that his brother was dead. Learning about Benjamin's past through his brother was amazing. It seemed to confirm a huge number of memories that he claimed to have over the years. And one of Benjamin's accurate memories, like we mentioned, was his birthday. When genealogists first began deeper research into William Powell, one researcher claimed that she found a birth record for William B. Powell that put his year of birth as 1951. And when they told Benjamin this, he was devastated because he was very, very certain and ultimately right that he was born exactly 10 years before Michael Jackson. And obviously, the researchers found out they were wrong, and the birth record they had found was for William Brent Powell, and deeper research turned up a birth notice for William Burgess Powell, born on August 29th, 1948. Many of Benjamin's memories of locations were accurate as well. Benjamin had told multiple reporters that he had a memory of a restaurant in Colorado named Azar's that had terrible service. Researchers discovered that Benjamin had worked in that restaurant during his time in Colorado. His memories of locations in Lafayette had also been accurate. Not only were researchers able to identify many of the locations Benjamin described, but he had only lived an hour away from many of them. It was completely plausible that he had visited those places in his youth. The memories of Indianapolis had been incredibly distinctive, including a detailed visit to the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, the Woolworths on the Circle, the Scottish Rite Cathedral, and the White River. Specifically, Benjamin remembered the White River, quote, when it was mostly just a dumping ground. And one of the most interesting memories from Indianapolis was his memory of the Crown Hill Cemetery, which he didn't know the name of, but was able to describe well enough for others to identify. As interviewers learned more and more about William Burgess Powell, Benjamin Kyle's tales over the last 11 years became even more believable.
Now, nobody really knows what actually happened to Benjamin in Colorado or why his brother and an Army intelligence officer couldn't find him. A reporter looked into William Powell's Social Security records and found a history of him working a variety of jobs in Colorado until 1983, but then the records just stopped. It's very strange. There seems to be no records from the 21-year period between 1983 and when Benjamin was found in Georgia in 2004. It's almost like he kind of disappeared off the face of the earth for a while. It's weird. And of course, mental illness or personality disorders could explain this gap or Benjamin's bizarre behavior and tendency to disappear. Still, those years may never be known to Benjamin or his family, which he actually might be okay with. One thing I thought was really interesting is he has talked about how, because over the years, there have been people who have accused him of not wanting to, like, why doesn't he actually want to know who he is? He doesn't seem to be trying very hard to figure out who he is. And imagine what that would be like to have all these years that you have no idea what you did or who you came from. Maybe it's bad stuff you don't want to know.
Yeah, true.
Or things that have happened to you that you would want to forget. So I totally understand him like not wanting to pursue all of that.
Well, and he's been spending the last 8-10 years rebuilding his life. Right. So imagine like rebuilding your life, your confidence as a human being,
yeah,
and like planning your future forward. And then it comes to find out there's this horrific past that you now have to deal with.
Right, right.
And how that would affect your future.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he might be just fine with not knowing what happened in that period of time.
Which I would understand. I feel like that's his right.
And when the discovery of his identity was made, Benjamin posted a public thank you to the FBI agents and adoption researchers who worked so diligently to discover his true identity. He was happy, but worried that merging his old life with his new life could be overwhelming. And in the months after the discovery of his identity, Benjamin worked to regain his former identity. He requested a birth certificate, ordered a new social security card, and began talking with his brother over the phone, which he said was really strange at first, because when he was talking to Furman, it felt like he was talking to himself. Like he could hear his own voice coming back through the phone because he sounded so similar, which would be so weird. He also tried to reach out to his brother, Robert, down in Florida. And unfortunately, it seems that Robert has been unresponsive to Benjamin's attempts to reconnect. As far as what is available online, I don't know if they've reconnected at this point, but yeah, I mean, I don't know what the deal is there. It's pretty sad to think about. In October of 2015, a documentary crew did pay to fly Benjamin to Indiana to meet his brother Furman in person. And for over a week, Benjamin was taken around to meet his cousins and family members who told him stories of his life there. That'd be so weird. Other people telling you about the life that you lived, but don't remember at all. However, over the next few months, Benjamin noticed that his brother Furman was becoming increasingly frail. And with that, Benjamin made the decision to move back to Indiana and help his brother, which I think is pretty amazing. He packed up all his belongings and made his way to Indiana in a moving truck that was paid for by the same documentary crew that paid to reunite him with his family. He moved into a modest house that was only a 5-minute bike ride from his childhood home. And what's crazy is despite how close he was living to his childhood home and the time that he had spent with his brother, Benjamin actually couldn't bring himself to enter his childhood home because having to confront the possible memories that it might bring, including remembering why he felt the need to leave at the age of 16 and never return in the first place, it was just too much for him. I totally get that. And despite the hardships from his past, Benjamin is now living a modest life with family members close by.
He's now 76.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just found a local article talking about how him and his brother have just really reconnected. This article's so from 2016, but it says Furman and his brother, Bill, goes by Bill.
Oh, he does.
Bill's nickname for William. And right, it says that they see each other at least 2 or 3 times a week. They go to Goodwill most Wednesday nights. Furman looks for CDs and Bill picks up DVDs to add to a collection that numbers more than 1,000.
Wow.
So of course he's watching all those movies he missed.
Yeah.
It also says that Furman and his brother like to check out restaurants and that Bill is partial to the tenderloin sandwich at the Black Sparrow in downtown Lafayette. There was a reality show or like a documentary miniseries that was supposed to come out by like Snakes Media or something. They made the Breaking Amish show on TLC. Like there was a TLC show called Finding Benjamin supposed to come out, but I don't think that ever actually
played out. Maybe they bailed on it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Huh. Finding Benjamin.
Yeah, Finding Benjamin. But
oh, that's so up like TLC.
Oh, I know, right? But there's this really nice quote in here from his brother Furman that I just want to read. Basically, you know, he gets this call from CC Moore and is like, hey, we found your brother. After it was the first time in 40 years he had seen his brother. And this was a quote that he had. It says, it's like he walked in and we picked up right where we left off. Said, that sounds strange, I'm sure, seeing as what Bill's been through, but it's true. I still can't get over it all.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
I love the ending of this. It's so rare with the topics we cover to get to have a happy ending. And of course, it's not like completely happy. What happened to him is just horrific. And I'm sure he's still so traumatized and so much he doesn't get to know. And setback so far in life, but to see him get sort of a happy ending, get to reconnect with his brother, that's just magical. I love to hear that.
Yeah, just living his life. But I couldn't imagine dealing with this hole in your memory of 20 years.
Yeah. Well, it is frustrating to think that if the police had taken it seriously in the beginning and didn't just drop him off at the hospital and say, see ya, we're not going to even investigate this, that he could have had this all sooner. With all the time that he's lost, there was no time to waste.
Yeah.
And a lot of time was wasted. And that's frustrating.
It is.
But yeah, what an amazing person. After everything he's been through, to not have anger and to not... I mean, he just was so positive. I really love him.
I do too. Big fan.
Yeah. Big fan.
Crazy story, though.
He would be another interesting person to interview. I'd love to get to talk to someone like that in person.
Yeah, that would be very... Yeah. But it's like,
yeah,
what do you remember about this? You know,
yeah.
From the interviews, I'm like, is that really like a good thing to do? Somebody like that, put him on the spot and be like, what do you remember?
So true.
You
know, like, that's so true.
Oh, you don't remember anything? It's like, duh, yeah. He had amnesia.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, you're so right.
I think it'd be interesting to speak to like somebody who studies this, like amnesia, yeah. And like neurological disorders and things like that. I think mm-hmm. that's, I find that all fascinating. And obviously there's the brain, the human brain in itself is a fascinating thing.
I just more want to hang out with him.
Yeah, I just want to watch some movies, eat a tenderloin sandwich, and
totally
kick it, man.
Yeah.
But the mystery's still there.
Yeah.
We'll probably never know what happened in those 20 years. If I had to like guess,
easy.
And I would hope that like there's a lot of that time, like I think our minds like to go to, was he just like laying in a field for years and years and years, you know?
My mind doesn't go there, but.
Like, I hope he was living his life and then. Hopefully he wasn't, I just hope he wasn't laying by that dumpster naked covered in ants for that long. You know what I mean?
Like, obviously he wasn't.
No, I'm not saying years, but I'm just saying like, hopefully it wasn't, you know, he wasn't like out there suffering for a long time.
For that whole period. I know what you mean. Yeah.
I'm not saying for, years. He's obviously.
He's never looked back.
They came out one morning and he was there. So, yeah. But I just hope there wasn't
there
like.
There was a life being lived during that.
There was a life being lived.
It wasn't just. Unknown and struggling all that time. But who knows, he could have been.
But maybe there was a crime perpetrated against him or something.
Yeah.
And somebody did attack him or took all of his stuff. And
there's
left
a reason
there.
That no one has come forward to say how he ended up there.
Right, right. I think there's more to the story, obviously, than what we'll ever know. But
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Inspiring, though. I mean, for someone like him, who has all the odds stacked against him, can't do anything, can't work, can't live comfortably, can't fall in love, nothing. And he still had a positive attitude and still cared about others. So interesting to hear him in that interview say, you know, I didn't want to put any of my baggage or anything. Yeah. I didn't think it was my right to do that.
Mm.
I mean, he's truly an amazing person. Very inspiring.
And big round of applause for Cece Moore.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
She is the coolest.
Like, literally a lifesaver.
For a long time.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Unless I'm getting confused.
Well, she was the one who cracked the Golden State Killer. If you're not familiar with her, that's like where we all kind of first really heard about her through GEDmatch. So, I mean, just the work that they're doing in genealogy and DNA is amazing. And I think it's going to solve a lot of cold cases going into the future. But yeah, clearly we need more experts like that out there, and most of these police departments and law enforcement agencies feel like they need their own CC Moore to help out with sometimes, because it just seems like
need more CC Moores.
Definitely. But let us know what you think of Mr. Williams' story, aka Benjamin Kyle, aka BK Doe.
BK Doe.
Burger King should hook him up. Honestly.
I know.
Like for how big of a story this is.
Yeah.
And the fact that they aren't, like, I'm also wondering, is Burger King a little bit liable for what happened to him? You know, he's potentially on their property. What if he was attacked on Burger King property and they never like helped out in the investigation? Shots fired at Burger King. I'm not a fan. So
Burger King's nasty.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough.
Let us know your thoughts.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Until then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.